Lot Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start the show, this one mic.
We There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and fans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Brooks.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
Show this one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start the show, this one mic.
Welcome to RSG One Mic. From the heart of the Midwest, we got a heat wave going on. We all three of us may be doing this show in our drawers. We don't care. You might see a fan in the background. Hank finally got his AC back on. It's hot, but we dedicated to the cause, so we're going to still bring it back to you anyway. And so, you know, if you want to catch anything we have going on, check us out on realsportsguys.com. We got a lot going on. On our upcoming podcast, we're going to be doing one with Phil T. We're going to be talking about possible models for college basketball. So we got a lot hitting on the platform. So check us out on realsportsguys.com or Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. But this is One Mic. This is where we warm you up with a little bit of open mic. Then we get into the cipher, the heart of it, and then we hand it over to the patriarch, the elder of the group to drop the mic for us. And so we're not going to waste any time because the heat is on. Our feet are probably hot. I'm going to bring my man Hank in to give us a sense of how he's doing and whether or not he's doing the show from underneath his AC unit now that it's working.
Oh, man. First of all, let me give a shout-out to all y'all out there. It feels good. There's just one problem. The AC is working, but now my house has melted. They took too long, D. They took too long. So I'm sitting outside in the cool, watching the stars and the skies while my couch and my TV and my refrigerator have all melted into puddles around me.
That's that Midwest life, boy. People talk about the winters, but when it get hot out here, that humidity, that's why so many football teams used to run their camps, their first part of the camp up in the Midwest. You had those teams coming up to Wisconsin and everything else because it was perfect weather to try to get players in shape. You had the Bears up in there. You had, New Orleans came a couple times. Kansas City came up there. So this is why they used to come up here and do this stuff. So we feeling the heat wave. We've been trying to push it for so long because we had so much rain and everything else. Now it's here. I'm just like, oh my goodness. It was good to have a rain shower this morning. And then we got the youngin. He probably over there with last time I saw him, he was out in the heat with a hoodie on. So young people don't understand, Hank. They don't know what to do when the heat is on. He came out.
I don't know what
that's called. Barbecue. He come. It was 85 degrees. He walks back there with a hoodie on. I'm saying I can't tell him nothing.
No.
I said there's something about common sense, but sense ain't common.
The thermostat is broke.
Oh.
What's up, young man? How you doing, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm feeling great. Summer's in full effect. And we don't worry about the heat over here. My blood comes from Africa, so we don't worry about the heat. But before I get any further, I want to say rest in peace to Pernell Whitaker. We lost a legend on Monday.
Yes.
One of the best to ever do it. One of the best defensive fighters ever. One of the best Olympic teams to ever to ever do in the summer of 84. And I just wanted to get that out there, rest in peace.
I was hoping you were going to raise that. You're doing all right, man. But I'm glad you raised that about Purnell, Sweet Pea. I mean, if you youngins haven't checked out Sweet Pea, check it out. I mean, the videos are incredible when you think about how great this guy from defensive, what he was able to do, and then, you know, then have some power, and it was just some big fights. This is someone that is one of those legendary fighters that a fighter's fighter. Like, there are certain fighters where when they fight, other fighters show up. That's what happens when Purnell is fighting. All of the top dogs show up. Now every fighter don't get that kind of travel. But you know when you're a dog is when all the other dogs show up when you fight. That's the real respect. You don't need to be pound for pound or whatever that is. Whenever he fought, the rest of the dogs showed up. So while we're doing this boxing theme, we're going to place the youngin. As I told y'all, we have this podcast that we do on the Real Sports Guys platform called Boxing Moment. With Darnell and myself, you know, this guy is really growing and really, you know, this is one of the underground boxing minds in the country right now. We develop it here. People don't know about him, but as you know, he knows this game. This cat studies it. So we want to isolate him because we got a big fight coming up and with Keith one time Thurman, not because he knocked y'all one time. He only fight one time a year, but we'll deal with that later. And then we got Pac-Man, Manny Pacquiao. Coming through the game, it's only appropriate that we isolate and have my man provide the keys to victory for both fighters and his prediction for the fight. So go ahead and take it, youngin. You're in isolation. ISO. You are now James Harden, and I'm standing over here like CP3, like pass the ball.
Well, I'm not passing it quite yet, but my opinion about this fight is. It's an interesting fight because, in my opinion, both of these guys picked the fight for the same reason. Both of these guys were trying to, in a sense, cherry pick each other. Manny Pacquiao was on his way he wants to make another resurgence at a championship, but he chose Keith Thurman. I know you're going to say, How do you cherry pick a champion? But it's not necessarily cherry picking when you're trying to fight a bad fighter, but it's the fighter with the circumstances that best suits you, right? So Manny Pacquiao seeing the guy in Keith Thurman that has been off for about 2 years, coming off of injury, came back and had a very a very questionable performance against Josecito Lopez. He had some good moments. He boxed well, but in the seventh round, he was hurt bad by the Riverside Rockies. He was staggered. He was flopping all over the ring, just like your boy James Harden, flopping all over the ring. And Manny Pacquiao was sitting in his living room saying, "Maybe I could do this." And on the other hand, we got Keith Thurman. He's saying, "Man, I don't want to fight Errol Spence. I don't want to fight Terrence Crawford. But we have this guy on PBC. There's a new guy on PBC named Manny Pacquiao. He's a legend. He's going to give me a lot of money. This is going to be my first fight on pay-per-view. And I'm going to just take what's coming at me. And I think it's going to be a very favorable fight for me because I'm fighting a guy that's older. He relies a lot on his athleticism, and he's 40 years old, let's face it. 40 years old, so the athleticism has to be waning at some point. He might get old in one night. Well, he's already old, but you get what I'm saying. So both of these guys are taking it from that standpoint. But in my opinion, I will not bet on this fight. But if I will not bet on this fight, but for my prediction, I'm going to have to go with Keith Thurman. Because Keith Thurman should be able to beat Manny Pacquiao. He better be able to beat Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao is a 40-year-old man. Like I said earlier, he relies mostly on his athleticism. He does a lot of things fundamentally wrong. He jumps in, he drops his head. He jumps in, comes in with his head first when he's throwing his combinations and stuff. And a guy like Thurman has good timing. He has a good counter puncher, even though he throws a lot of shots wide. But he's shown the ability to be able to catch the guys coming in. And with his ability to move, that's another thing Manny Pacquiao struggles with. Manny Pacquiao, he's an athletic guy, but he's not good at cutting off the ring. So if Keith Thurman can stay on the outside, counter punch, stand the ground when he needs to, he should be able to win this fight pretty handily. But with the questions with Keith Thurman's chin, I can't necessarily trust him. So it will not surprise me if Keith Thurman gets stopped in this fight. But in my opinion, the only way Manny Pacquiao can win this fight is by stoppage. So that is my take on the fight. Now I'll pass the ball to Devon with about 4 seconds left for the shot clock.
And I'm going to have to rush it and bang it off the side of the backboard. But thank you for the analysis. We will be watching the fight. We will be watching that fight, checking it out, and then we'll reflect on it. But I think you broke it down the right way. And this is, in many ways, for all their flaws, this is the pick 'em. And it shouldn't be. But because of coming back for injury and everything else, I mean, I think the way you find it, I think you're leaning towards Keith Thurman is probably the right thing, just because in a pick 'em, you go with youth, because they both have the kinds of flaws that it wouldn't surprise you which one would win or not win. So I love the way you do it. You know, there's a thing in education where we always talk about we're in the seed planting business. You say something, you work with somebody, you never know whether it's going to take or not or what it's going to take. And so your effort is just planting the seed. And there was a moment in the interaction between Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant that came to what could be at this point seen as a seed planting moment based on a recent interview on Fox by Howard. It was that moment when Howard went to Houston and he came back and played in the game against the Lakers. I believe that's what was the framing. You know, it was already tense. He comes back because obviously, you know, he and Kobe had a different way in terms of how to play, approach the game. And Kobe obviously didn't think that Howard took it seriously enough. And so when altercation happened, Kobe called him soft. And as Howard reflects on it in his interview, it was something that stung him for a long time because he believed that Kobe really didn't understand who he was. Even though he was affable, even though he's someone who was kind of the way he played with big effort, which his numbers will reflect. But he wasn't the kind of person who was going to be scowling and, you know, biting people's heads off. That was never his approach, but that didn't mean he was not going to try to produce. And so, obviously, when he had a chance to go into free agency, you know, Kobe wasn't really trying to, you know, push to have him stay or not. And so he ended up leaving. And he ended up saying in this interview that now that he looks back on it, he kind of now understands what Kobe was trying to say to him, really trying to hit the level of intensity and kind of focus. And so it just got me thinking, you know, a couple of questions. You know, because of this way that Howard's been framed, it's interesting because this is a guy, if you look at it, he's produced, you look at his numbers over time, he was a dominant force. His numbers don't equal up to how people view him as his brand. And I was going to ask you to you, what is Dwight Howard's legacy? I know he's still playing, but he's on the backside of his career probably more than be on the front side. Hank, let me start with you. What do you see is Dwight Howard's legacy?
The thing is about Dwight Howard, he's one of those players that came right into the NBA right out of high school. Okay. And he was big, he was dominant, he was coined the name Superman for a while. He could leap out the gym for a big man, very athletic. The problem with Dwight Howard was, while his numbers might look good, guess what? When you stay in the league long enough, you've got the talent that he has. And you play 82-game seasons, your numbers are going to look great. You're going to look fabulous. The problem with Dwight Howard is with some of the teams that he played with, the Orlando Magic team that played against Boston and had a chance to go to the finals. the Lakers teams. These teams they brought him in to be that linchpin player to get teams over the top. And he found himself more times than not feuding with his teammates about his effort as far as his seriousness, about taking the game serious and being serious and doing what he needed to do to get them over the top. And he looked extremely childish in some of these situations. So the reason why you got players and stuff calling him soft is just because of that. With what you could see his potential should have been, he should have been, based upon his talent, just based upon his physical stature, one of the most, if not the most, dominant big man in the game. And that piece never measured up. He was matched with some of the best players in the NBA at the time, and he just simply was becoming more of a problem than he was an asset. And so when you got one of the greatest players to ever play the game in a Kobe Bryant, they're saying you're not taking this serious enough. And keep in mind, Kobe Bryant did the same thing with Shaq, you know, said that he wasn't taking his game to the next level as he should to try to get over the top. You know, and Howard, you know, showed himself to be very, very ultra sensitive, okay, which you really can't be in this league if you're not producing the way you're supposed to do, especially at crunch time. So what his legacy will be, you still right now got folks who hate him, okay? He mentioned some interest in possibly going back to the West Coast, and you got this thanks but don't thanks about him. And see, once you get that stigma on you, that's going to carry you a long way, because keep in mind, what you do in a regular season, what you do in the playoffs is two different animals. And if you're causing problems in the regular season, or if you're perceived to be a problem in the regular season, and it does not translate to something that looks like W's in the preseason, then your legacy is set. You are a whiner, a crier, and soft. And while I know there was a conversation between him and Kobe now, he's grown up a lot from the time he's gotten in. You know, that's like barring the gate after the horse had left.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy, you know, he went to a small Christian high school. But when you look at this, all that being said, this is a young man, or older man, or man. He's an 8-time NBA All-Star, 5-time All-NBA first team. He's a 3-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year. He's a 4-time NBA All Defensive First Team. I mean, he's a slam dunk champion. He's a 2-time NBA block leader. You know, when you look at the co MVP of the NBA of the McDonald's All American Game, he's a gold medalist. I mean, if you were to say that and not put his name on there, you would say this guy had a hell of a career. And in his time, he was the dominant center. So it's like even how you described it, the narrative doesn't add up to actually his production. Went deep in the playoffs in the East. You know, even with a coach like Van Gundy likes to coach every possession down the floor, which we know there's some flaws with that. And so that's it. I mean, you laid out a lot of good stuff. But when you put those stats down, it's like, wow, this guy did a lot coming straight out of high school. You know, at a small high school, you know, and I think that was part of it, was very religious when he came out, and then that exposure of being a you know, NBA star and all the stuff that's coming at you when you him, you know, basically a grown man, a kid in a grown body, you know, he endured a lot. He's only 33 years old. Youngin, what's your opinion on this?
Well, in my opinion, Dwight Howard's legacy, he's going to be one of those guys that is remembered for having two careers, kind of like how we view a guy like Grant Hill or like Anthony Penny Hardaway, that had a great start to their career, a guy that has so much promise that that will make the NBA Hall of Fame, I mean the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame one day. But at the end of the day, he did not necessarily reach his ceiling or his potential that we all had thought for him. A lot of people joke on Dwight Howard, but people don't remember. When Dwight was in Orlando, he was a monster. Dwight Howard, he eliminated they eliminated the Celtics. They eliminated LeBron James when LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers had the best record in the NBA. And he took the Magic, he was the only superstar on the team, and he took them to the finals. They did get swept by Kobe, but he ruined the whole Kobe versus LeBron. There, the whole Kobe versus LeBron showdown that was supposed to happen, Dwight Howard and the Orlando Magic ruined that. People forget that. And another thing people forget is Dwight Howard, right before he went to L.A., he had a back injury. And like I said with Manny Pacquiao, Dwight Howard's one of those guys. His game was largely predicated on athleticism. He a lot of people got on him because he really needed to build a more skillful game, which I agree with as well. But he never quite was able to put it together. So when his athleticism faded because of his back injuries and also other injuries that came along with the back injury, he wasn't necessarily the same. Even though he wasn't necessarily the same, but at the same time, if you look at that year that he had with the Lakers, he was still putting up great numbers. And then after he left the Lakers, he went on to the Houston Rockets. And when he was on the Houston Rockets, he was on a team where they quite frankly didn't focus on him. Like, they weren't giving him the touches that he needed. James Harden was doing the James Harden stuff you were talking about earlier. And they pretty much wanted him to be what Clint Capella is now, the guy who's going to set a screen, dive to the basket, don't necessarily look for the ball that often, get your own rebound, and maybe put it back. But Dwight Howard at the time, he had a big ego because he was the guy that he took the Magic. Like I said, he took the Magic to the finals. So he was like, man, I'm Superman. Give me the ball. But they're not going to do that. So he got his way out of Houston, and then that's where the whole, like, Dwight Howard – he changes teams. He doesn't fit here. And another thing I want to say is when Kobe called Dwight Howard, this is the question. When Kobe called Dwight Howard soft, was that when, if I remember correctly, is this when he was on the Rockets and he got the rebound, Kobe fouled him, and then there was like the double technical thing?
Yeah.
I think they were teammates when this incident happened.
No, it was when he came back. I thought I said yesterday. Yeah, he came back his return game when he went to the Rockets. But the thing you said about it, I mean, people don't realize he swept LeBron James in 4-2. He had 40 points with 14 rebounds in the deciding game 6 going into the finals. Like, those are numbers. He dominated that. And like you said, he ruined the Kobe versus LeBron opportunity that everybody's looking for. And led his team. And when he went to the Lakers, he went, like, this is where the soft piece, I think he pushed back on. I came to y'all. I could have sat out, and I played through a whole year hurt.
Yeah.
And I think he also might have a leg.
Yeah, the back and the shoulder injury.
I played through that whole thing hurt, but yet you call me soft? When I didn't have to play at all. But I showed up every day and played, even though I was smiling. And I think that's the part that comes on. So then I'm going to switch this to Kobe. Everybody talks about the mama mentality, and some people confused because everybody's talking about this today around what leadership means. And Kawhi and leadership, there's a really good conversation about that. And one of the people said is performance isn't necessarily leadership. Just because you play well doesn't mean that you led your teammates. And so to y'all, is the mama mentality about leadership, or is it about the desire to be the best, which is not the same thing? And to what extent did Kobe's lack of ability to lead impact the way in which Dwight could have been more successful at L.A.? I'm going to go to you, Youngin, to let you make it happen. Darn it.
Okay, so so you said, can you repeat that question, please? I'm sorry. You said,
the mama mentality. A lot of what that friction was between Howard and Kobe was because Kobe believed he didn't have the ability to have the mama mentality. And
right.
And he thought his way of addressing him was the way he was trying to lead to change him, right? And a lot of people have friction around how he handled that. And so
Now he's building his whole brand on the Mamba mentality. Got all these young guys talking about the Mamba mentality. And to my and the discussion that we're having today is that great teams have players who actually lead. One of the things they talk about with Dame Lillard is the way in which he interacts with everybody from 2 to 15, in the way in which he builds his capacity, in addition to being a great player, right, in addition to hitting the game-winning shot. The way Isaiah led, right, led and could hit the big button. So he had his individual performance, but he also understood winning the championship was about his ability to build the capacity of people around him. And some people have different styles of leadership. Michael's style sometimes was about fear. But also Michael did a lot of stuff behind the scenes to build capacity, whether it's the car games, it's the social stuff, it's, you know, things he did with his teammates to build, to do that both ways. So when you talk about mentality, you see what I'm saying? That's the way I'm framing it. How do you see the Mamba mentality as it relates to leadership?
I see what you're going. I'm going two ways with this. First of all, the Mamba mentality, when I think of Mamba mentality, I'm thinking of the work ethic, the things you do in preparation, the way that a guy like Kobe and them go about their business. Like, he was a guy that was like him and Ray Allen and guys like that. They would be at the gym hours and hours and hours before a game, shooting hundreds of shots before the game. And that's another way I think of it. And another thing, I like to take it back a little further to this whole debate that was had in the early to mid-2000s with Kevin Garnett versus Tim Duncan, kind of that debate, which a lot of guys were saying, a lot of guys are thinking that just because a guy like Tim Duncan didn't show a lot of emotion with his face, they didn't think, oh, he doesn't play as hard as Kevin Garnett, because Kevin Garnett is yelling at people and, you know what I'm saying, he's talking trash. So they don't think that he's necessarily playing this hard. And that's another thing that you can parlay into, like a guy like Kawhi Leonard that has like a straight face, or a guy like Dwight Howard that might smile when he plays. And because he's smiling, or just because he doesn't necessarily talk trash, doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't really work hard on the court. And that can also play into like the leadership aspect of things. Just because you don't see people necessarily yelling and doing the things like, you know, like a Tom Brady would do, or like a Kobe would do on the court, on the field of play, as far as yelling at the teammates, you know what I'm saying, stuff like that, doesn't necessarily mean that they're not a good leader. Because you have guys like Tim Duncan, like I mentioned earlier. You have guys that that lead by example. You have guys that lead pretty much like that. They lead through example. They lead, and they show you the way to go. And that's pretty much the way I think about the model mentality and the way it's perceived.
And I think, and that's part of why I think that's an interesting take on it, because, you know, one of the things, so take somebody who probably took a similar approach that Kobe did. I mean, Barkley tells a story, and this is a person that probably fits into one of the other examples, but his directness is probably similar to probably Kobe's. But Moses Malone told Barkley that he needed to lose some weight. You need to go. So he got on him the way that Kobe probably would have gotten on Dwight about whatever he needed to do. But then, what you know what Moses Malone did? Worked with Barkley to lose 40 pounds. He worked with him, right? He got him going on how to lose it, right? And so part of this is this idea of, you know, greatness is done in this kind of individual space and not done in community. Might be, listen, now Kobe might have done that, but I think in this instance, my whole thing with this whole Dwight thing was always about, to what extent do you know as a role as a leader to connect with him and work with him and figure out how to build his capacity if you think he can help you win. And that's a piece that I don't – the Mamba mentality means, yeah, you shoot at 3 in the morning, but you shoot at 3 in the morning sometimes by yourself, right? But to what extent are you doing – I'm not saying Kobe never did that. I think Kobe even admits he had to learn how to be a leader. You know, he knew how to keep himself going, but he – at a certain point, he realized being a champion required him to get everybody else's capacity involved in it,
But at the time he was with the White, he wasn't quite there yet. We
no,
all
I agree.
Would believe that. So
yeah, and that goes back to the backstory of a guy like Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
He's an isolationist kind of guy because even though he was born here, he grew up in Italy. He pretty much he developed his game by himself because he did, and then when he came back to Philadelphia and went through his high school days, he wasn't able to relate to the people that he was with. So that can kind of speak to the way he is and the way he necessarily can't relate to other players around him.
Those are good points about his early development. Hank, will you contribute to this?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to say that, the one thing about this Mamba mentality, let's just look at the Kobe Bryant brand in and of itself. This is a man that we know at one time scored 82 points in the game while the rest of his team watched. This is a man that also, right around the 2004 season, was questioning the work ethic of Shaquille O'Neal, one of the top 100 players in the league. Okay? So his mentality is his mentality. Now, you got a young player like a Dwight Howard who did, as we have discussed, lead a team to the NBA Finals. Okay? He's over here in Los Angeles, and he's trying to win him a championship. And if he's running into this sort of friction of the Kobe Bryant Black Mamba experience, in which you know for a fact that he is now the face and the name of the Los Angeles Lakers, okay? And if he did not come across very well, this leadership thing of what he's talking about, like you said, he is the player. Everything goes through him, all right? And you telling Dwight Howard to come over here, now you've got to succumb to this, okay? But I'm a great player in my own right, okay? But I'm young. And I'm enjoying being in the league and all these other things. So now you're going to hit him in a way that pretty much alienates him with the rest of those players on that team, because whatever Kobe says goes. So you got to also throw in that element too, as to what kind of dissension that this Mamba experience put into the locker room, where everybody else has already succumbed to, or should I say, submitted to. Kobe Bryant being the end-all, be-all, and the start and the beginning and the alpha and the omega of the L.A. Lakers. And then you bring in a player like Dwight Howard, who's supposed to be a superman, if you will, superstar, and then you all of a sudden calling him soft and all these other sort of things. Well, then guess what? That's going to carry, because of the influence of a player like a Kobe Bryant, just like when we go back in the day as we've done before, and you see the influence that a Michael Jordan had on the legacy of the Detroit Pistons, okay? You can see that what Kobe did could also impact the legacy of one Dwight Howard. The numbers don't bear it out, but we see how this man is looked at.
Yeah, and those are really good points. And for those longtime listeners, my man Game Changer had his most legendary rant was about Dwight Howard. And I think in the spirit of this discussion, we're gonna try and re-release that rant. It was straight hilarious regarding Dwight Howard. So I will do that. That was one of the all time best to do it. But I think this is a great discussion because across many areas of sports, it's some of these kind of nuances that begin to define somebody's legacy in a way that doesn't bear out when we talk about sports being a meritocracy, doesn't bear out to what actually might happen if you go by the numbers. Right? If you go by the production and compare production, someone like Dwight Howard at 33 years old, started at 18. You look at what I just said earlier about him, had a very dominant career by anybody's measure. So it's one of those things where, it's always good to kind of look at this and for him to reflect on, he's at that point right now, he's reflecting on his career. It's like yesterday he was just 18 for some of us who watched him come in. But now he's in this reflective mode and recognizing those moments where he could have brought a little bit more different approach to things. So that's a very interesting part of what this is all about. That's why we want to spend some time to do it. But now we're going to decipher the quiet before the storm. College football is coming up, and we're going to talk about that next.
Call the cipher.
All right, the cipher. The title of the cipher, which is the title of the podcast.
the quiet before the storm, college football. And in this one, because of like hip hop and how it flows with one mic, we got five elements that we got to hit as it relates to kind of our preseason conversation around college football. So we're going to work right through this stuff. We're going to just get right into it. But college football at the end of the day starts with one thing. People like to figure out who's going to be that dog at the end of the year. And up until this point, it's been all about the Sooners. You know what I'm talking about, the Heisman Trophy. It's been a Sooner Award. Can we just change it? Can we change it to the Sooner Award? Because the last two winners came from Oklahoma. And so the question is, will it be another Sooner? Or will we have other takers? Who are some of our top three who we think might be competing for the Heisman this year? I'm going to start with Hank. Give me your top three preseason folks that you think are going to be in that running for the Heisman.
Well, let me tell you something. I think that the Sooner Award is – I think it comes to an end this season, okay? I think that we had two very dynamic quarterbacks in Kyler Murray and in Baker Mayfield. It was in Oklahoma. Good for them. But I think that this year we were going to probably see a change. My top three Heisman candidates coming in preseason, Trevor Lawrence. The sophomore quarterback from Clemson. If you watched the national championship game last year, this young man, you know, they said if he wasn't a freshman, if he had the eligibility, that he would have probably been the top pick in the draft. Okay, he's only a sophomore. He's going to be leading Clemson next year. I think you got to keep an eye on him. The other young man was the front runner for most of last year before the injury started to get him, and that's Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback out of Alabama. Okay, and he was breaking all kinds of records, and then the injury bug started to plague him a little bit, but he comes back healthy, he comes back ready, and you got to keep an eye on him because again, you're talking about Alabama, he's going to be seen a lot. Now my third pick is I'm going out on the deep end a little bit. I know that my Badger friend over there, I know he's got the running back. I'll let him use him, but I'm going to take somebody else in the Big Ten. And I'm going to say because this young man is such a dynamic player, he is such an exciting player, okay, that he's going to be one that people are going to look at simply because of how many touches he's going to get, and that's Rondale Moore out of Purdue. Now, this ain't got nothing to do with Purdue University as a team, but the offense that they run. And if you watch what this young man did by himself against Ohio State last year, okay, as a freshman. If you watch what he did when he played against Northwestern to start the season last year, Rondale Moore is going to be one of those kind of players like Lamar Jackson was with Louisville. Not the greatest team in the world, but one of the most explosive, one of the most exciting players you're going to keep an eye out for. And I think he's going to garner some Heisman attention simply because he's going to be on special teams as well as on the offensive side as a wide receiver. So those are my three: Rondale Moore, Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, and Trevor Lawrence.
Wow, that's good stuff. We'll come back to those things. I think those are really good, interesting picks. All right, hit me with it, Darnell. Who you got?
Well, I thought this three would be the one everybody would have, but I guess not. But Trevor Lawrence, the Sunshine Scooter. You know, he could have started for over half of the NFL teams last year. This dude is just that special. I believe he's going to win the Heisman, but this is way too early, of course. The Heisman is won in the last half of the season, as we all know. My second choice would be Tua Tagovailoa. He is also a very he's very good. He's an exceptional quarterback. I look at him as almost like a left-handed version of Russell Wilson. He's a shorter guy. He's kind of injury prone, actually. That's one thing Russell Wilson is not. But his accuracy is something that is special. He's gonna have to work on his I wouldn't say he. It seems like in big games, he seems to be a little turnover prone, but I'll take it with a talent like Tua. And my third is going to be, like you said, the Oklahoma Sooners. It's the magic. He's going to be somewhere in the mix. Jalen Hurts. He is one of the most clutch players in college football. he's gonna be absolutely let loose with the system that Oklahoma runs. And I'm gonna look for him to be somewhere in the mix. And my dark horse, I don't know if I can if I'm allowed one dark horse or some an outside guy, but that would be Sam Ehlinger of Texas.
All right, and you might have to bring Sam back at some point on that one. I think we're all in on Tua and Trevor. I think Tua's struggle is going to be his coach. He's lost some key offensive coordinators. His ability, he's replaced, you know, they replaced, I think they had I don't know how many, they had like, was it 8 or 9 assistant coaches exit, maybe more Alabama. So there's a lot of new coaches.
A lot of
and
them,
part
yeah.
of it is to what extent will Saban go back to the mean? Like his formula historically was running the football with a little bit of passing. Over the past couple of years, he kind of said, I'm going to convert and do it. And Tua helped him do that. Then they took the beat down. So then to what extent will they let him be free? So that's going to be, you know, and they're going to have some really good games. It's going to be some tight matchups. Some teams are going to be getting better over there in that SEC West. That's going to be competitive. And so will he have those moments? And I think part of it, which might benefit to it, because there's going to be some fourth-quarter moments where he's going to have to come through and make some plays to get him over the top, whereas he, because they were winning so big early in the season last year, he didn't have a lot of fourth-quarter moments. And then Trevor Lawrence, you know, he got nicked up and got hurt a little bit after the Syracuse game, and can he stay healthy? And, you know, there are times sometimes you have runs like this where somebody might speak up in that ACC. You know, there's Miami under Manny Diaz grew up bracing noise and create some upsets where that wouldn't have happened that might cause some headaches for Trevor Lawrence when everybody thinks they should dominate the ACC. But those two are clearly the front runners. And then I bring in, I think, you know, was kind of stolen by my man Hank, you know, who brought it in. You know, Doak Walker Award winner. and, you know, has to be given some consideration around it. But I will say this, I was most critical of him. And we're talking about Jonathan Taylor, running back of Wisconsin Badgers, is that he had the fumbles. So he's going to have to secure the football this year or he's not going to be here. But I also think that they are going to clear up. Their biggest issue was they didn't have quarterback play. And they got Grant Mertz coming in. They're going to have much more stable quarterback play and being able to get people out of the box than they had last year. And plus, their receivers who are hurt are back. They have one of their, I think, a very solid receiving core coming through and with somebody who can actually get the ball downfield. And that's problems for anybody because you know they know how to move the football. And that defense is going to be back to where it needs to be. And I think their schedule lines up a way that will allow him to put the numbers up and build on his campaign. But he's got to take care of the football. So he's someone who's in there, but there could be some yips for him as well if he's not handling that football the way he needs to handle it. So I think there's some really good – I think all three of us have some folks who are probably going to be in that consideration here in the first element around the Heisman. So we're going to move past the Heisman because we'll be able to come back to that a lot and talk about during the season. This is always interesting to me because, you know, the preseason, all the preseason talk, everybody talks about everything. You know, it always ends up Clemson, Alabama, and a whole bunch of, you know, Georgia and everything else. But when you start looking at – when we get to the end of the season, there was a team that was projected to be outside the top 10. But when we get in November, it's making noise. And when you look at where they started, they have them preseason ranked at 15, 17, and they're just humming. And you're like, well, how do they have them ranked at preseason 17? And then people become – you know, people become all kinds of revisionists and whatever it is. That, and so the way we're going to do it, we're going to tell you now, and then when it happens, you're going to know we told you. We told you in July these teams are going to be in the top 10. This is how we do it at RSC. We put it on the line right now. Before Cass even got into practice, everything else, we're going to tell you they're going to be in the top 10. So these are three teams who are currently in preseason rankings outside the top 10 that we think will be in the top 10. I'll start with you, Hank.
You know what? I'm going to go with the obvious pick. I'm going with Notre Dame. Notre Dame right now is just outside the top 10. They're at 11 in the preseason poll. They got the quarterback back in book. I think that their schedule kind of lines up for them a little bit. I know they got to go to Ann Arbor, but they really don't have a whole lot of folks that they got to worry about that much this year. Now, I know they got to Alabama, they got to go to Georgia, they got to go to Ann Arbor. But, see, I'm not sold on Georgia like a lot of people are sold on Georgia. And Notre Dame kind of like snuck in there, and so that's a team that I'm looking at that I think can sneak into the top 10 by the end. There's a couple of teams that's in the top 10 that I just don't have a whole lot of confidence in. The other team that I think that can sneak in is Oregon. Oregon is another one of these teams that the quarterback decided, Justin Herbert decided to stay another year, and if you've got you a solid quarterback, you can do some damage, especially in what I would call a little bit of a down year for the Pac-12. There's got to be a face of that conference, and Oregon is primed right now to be able to do that with so many players out of the quarterback position that went to the next level. And then my third team is more of a dark horse. Okay, it's more of a dark horse. And it's because of the coach, and it's because of their quarterback, and that would be Nebraska. Now, the thing is about it is because Scott Frost has already shown when he was at UCF that he could turn a team around pretty quick. Okay, and I look at what the resources that he have in Nebraska. I think they got Nebraska ranked somewhere like 19, and there can be just enough crazy that goes on in the Big Ten West Side. Then I think that with some of the talent they got on that offense, that they can make enough noise to probably just sneak in. Now, that's just we'll see. But I think that there's going to be a lot of cannibalism going on in the SEC and maybe in the Big Ten East, for that matter, that Nebraska could probably sneak in there right around the 10th spot.
All right. Those are good picks, and I didn't have Notre Dame just because when you look at the polls, some of them have them at 9, 8. So people have given them some credibility in some polls or not. So, but I think that's if they settle outside of it, I think that's a really good pick the way you got it, Darnell.
Yeah, I got them at 11. So you know if they're in the
top 10.
Yeah,
the list I see has Notre Dame at 10, but I will go with Oregon. Like Hank said, because they have a returning quarterback that's very good, going to be possibly a top five or top 10 draft pick in next year's draft, and Justin Herbert. And quite frankly, Oregon doesn't play anybody. His Pac-12 is probably one of the worst, if not the worst, out of the college five conferences as far as football goes. So I would go with either Oregon, Washington, and then I will go with the UCF Knights, even with McKenzie Milton being out. UCF is another team. They don't necessarily play elite competition, but they're a very talented team, a very well-coached team. I see UCF making a push. They might go for another undefeated season. They might end up with one loss or so, but I'm pretty much projecting UCF to go undefeated. So my three teams would be UCF, Washington, and Oregon.
So my three teams, and this is a team for a couple of reasons. You'll know why I have to put them in there, because if they don't, there's going to be some other stuff, some other repercussions if they don't. Mine is Auburn, because Gus Malzahn has got to have success. You know, he's coming off a route of Purdue and what happened, but Auburn fans wanted to see it tick up. And so, and this is the kind of year when everybody's talking about Alabama, Clemson, and everything else, that somehow Auburn can, and I know my advisor for my PhD program, Dr. Jackson, is probably, if he listens to this, will appreciate it because this is alma mater. I think for some reason I feel like Auburn will make a run and will get into that top 10. My other one I just talked about and if he's a Heisman Trophy candidate is Jonathan Taylor. And part of it is with Wisconsin is that the Big Ten West is getting better. Minnesota's putting together some teams. I think Nebraska will be better. So strength of schedule within their side of division, I think, will benefit them in ways that will be helpful. But I think that their defense is going to be better, and I think just the quarterback is going to be playing. If anybody who watched Wisconsin last year was, and Hank would appreciate this from Michigan's woes, is that they had all the players everywhere else. They had no quarterback. Hornibrook just couldn't get it done. And then they started to erode. Injuries started going. People started overplaying. And by the end of the season, the team was different. They got a kid, Grant Mertz, who I think in an Under Armour game threw 6 touchdowns. This is, I think, their first 4-star quarterback. And Jack Cohen I just think they have an upgrade at quarterback, which is the key for that team, because I think everything else is going to be good. And I just think that I don't know if they've finished outside the top 10 maybe in the last 10 years easily. So this is a team that historically finds their way into the top 10. And then my last team that was mentioned a little bit by Darnell is Washington. First, the reason why is I think their problem last year is their quarterback was a great quarterback, but he couldn't throw. He couldn't get the ball downfield. And so everybody sat on them. And Washington, even though he lost some defensive players, I think that's a team that's always going to be able to replace their defense. I think he's always going to have talent on defense. I think their defense is going to be good. Their problem is, again, quarterback play, being able to stretch the field in a Pac-12 that is going to have some wins. But a Pac-12, I think, is going to be better this year. You know, I think you got Arizona's going to be a little bit better this year with another year. Arizona State's going to be a little bit better this year. Are they going to be able to compete with some of the other ones? I just think they're going to be better. They're going to have some non-conferences. But I think Washington would have an Easton at the – you know, Jacob Easton was a great quarterback at Georgia, another highly recruited quarterback who will be starting for them. And I think he has the skill set to take advantage of the talent that they got on the outside. So I think Washington will end up – will they make a run enough to get them into that Final Four? No, but I think they'll make enough noise to start letting people know that the Pac-12 is going back. And I think the only way the Pac-12 can get back is if teams like Washington, who historically have been dominant, regain that along with USC and some of the other teams. So I think Washington will get back into it. Just quickly around that, you know, were there some quick reactions around what we hear from people? Any surprises?
No, I don't think so as far as the teams that we picked so far.
Yeah.
No, I think your analysis is really good. I think that from what we see so far, it makes a lot of sense. This is what makes the preseason so difficult. We don't know. Now, and then you got players that's plugging in. Now, see, one of the things as far as Wisconsin that they kind of had me shy away from them was two things. Number one, because the quarterback position, and we haven't really seen him that much, and you lost 4 offensive linemen, okay, that's not playing on Sundays, okay? So you know that teams are going to load up and force your quarterback to throw the ball down the field, okay? And they're going to load up and they're going to try to stop Jonathan Taylor, make Jonathan Taylor, and make that team one-dimensional. I don't know how much Paul Chris wants to throw the football, okay? But if I got a weapon like Jonathan Taylor, I got to use him. I got to use him and utilize him probably in my passing game because those first few games, their quarterback school, that's going to be a team. They're going to say, we're going to try to take Jonathan Taylor away from you.
If there's one area that you know they're going to replenish on, it's always the line. That's the one thing, and that's why I didn't worry about it, because they build a system. The way they bring guys through, they're ready to play. And part of it is the way that they bring them through. They almost use a Nebraska system with these offensive linemen where they're competing against, in practice, they're competing against one of the top defenses in the country, their back guys. So that's why they can transfer, they can transition into starting roles. But so that's why they had the least amount of concern is because they can do it. And I think their quarterback play can make up for, like, Hornibrook could make up for a line that's going to need some help. Whereas I think these two quarterbacks now, they, you know, going in, particularly if they start Grant Mertz, they didn't bring him here to sit, but, you know, it's going to be a quarterback competition. These are guys that can get that ball out in ways that can relieve some of the stress. But I think your point is right on. It's going to be waiting to be seen what happens to them early on. Our next category is about who's off the radar. You know, those players that are not quite out in that national conversation. And I'll kick this one off just because Hank kind of opened up with somebody who I think is off the radar because people just don't know it because of his team, and that's Rondale Moore. I think Hank was right on. This is a kid, as a freshman, was a consensus All-American. The only other player to do that is Adrian Peterson. He had 12 receiving touchdowns and 1 rushing touchdown. He won the Paul Hornung Award. He's a consensus All-American, first team All-Big Ten. Big Ten Freshman of the Year. He is CBS Freshman of the Year. I mean, he was U.S. Today High School. I mean, this guy has all the awards. Grew up in Indiana and decided to go with the Boilermakers, and they get the ball to him in many different ways. So this is a guy I think is going to help them win some games that they normally wouldn't win because of the touches they're going to get him, and he's electric. He's one. And then one, I think Hank is going to like this one because I think what we hope we would have saw from him last year is what we will see from him this year. And he's kind of been lurking at the edges of the Heisman Trophy Award, and I'm not trying to be a homer, but I just think this guy is going to have a breakout season, and the schedule sets up for him to do that. It's Shea Patterson.
Yep.
Shea Patterson is, and I think part of it's going to come down, and we had this debate if my man Polo was listening, you got to check his article out on realsportsguys.com. But we had this argument after we played 18. This we can do. The brothers can love brothers and talk about it. He's a Michigan alum, but he's hard on Harbaugh. But Shea Patterson, with the offensive coordinator, I think we're going to see the full weapons of his ability to run, pass. And I just think that the way the season sets up, where Notre Dame, they play Notre Dame late, those games are going to be prime games. He'll have Ohio State at home. I think he's going to be key to winning those games. He's going to have to make some plays with his feet or whatever, and at a time when that Heisman conversation is beginning. And by that point, I think they're going to be, if not undefeated. I think they got Wisconsin they got to play. And I think that's a game they can win. I think it's in Madison. I want to say it or not, but I think he stacks up too. So those are two players I think that you have to pay attention to, kind of off the radar, aren't in that main conversation all the time. That I think Darnell.
Well, first of all, I believe Najee Harris is going to have absolutely banana season, because you're looking at a guy at Alabama in Najee Harris that he averaged 7 yards a carry. And he was the third running back in the depth chart. But now you have Josh Jacobs, he's in the NFL. Damon Harris, he graduated. Now he's in the NFL. So now he's going to get a lot more touches. And he's going to explode. You're going to see like something very special coming out of Najee Harris. I see him making an explosion and a big jump this season. And my second pick, it's going to be Chase Young. Chase Young is going to have a very good second year at Ohio State, the defensive end.
Yeah.
He's going to have he showed some promise last year, and he's going to be a guy that's going to make a big leap. And my third guy out of Ypsilanti, Michigan, none other than K.J. Osborne at University of Miami. He's a guy that they just announced he's going to be – he is on the watch list for the Fred Biletnikoff Award. He's a guy a lot of guys haven't necessarily seen because he was playing at Buffalo, but now he transferred to Miami. He's going to be in the ACC. He's going to get looked at because he's going to be playing against teams like Clemson, playing against guys like Florida State. So he's going to have a breakout season. He's going to get a lot of eyes on him to watch out for him.
All right, it's in Hank.
Okay, real quick. My breakout guys is going to be Kelly Bryant, the transfer from Clemson going over to Missouri. I expect him to really try to show what he's got going on. You guys took a couple of mine already. So the other one I'm going to pick is Adrian Martinez, the quarterback from Nebraska. This young man is a talent. He is something to see. It's a shame that Nebraska had the season that they had last year. He had hurt a couple of times, but he's definitely going to be somebody to watch. He's going to make Nebraska a very, very dangerous team to look at this year.
All right. And for you live listeners, we're about to go into our overtime to finish our last two, which will be coaches on the hot seat and who will make the Final Four and drop the mic. So if you're listening live to hear this one, you're going to have to catch us later because these are our two big ones. So you'll probably have to hear the coaches on the hot seat and who will make the Final Four on the recorded version, because we're about to go to overtime on this and drop the mic. So we're going to start with the coaches on the hot seat. I'm going to start with the coaches I got, and then we'll move to y'all. Willie Taggart, man, you just got to figure out how to do it, man. You left Oregon. You, you, the Dub, you went there, you got to figure out how to do it, man. If you don't get it right, you out. My other person, Clayton Hilton, USC. It's on, dog. If you don't do it, you they gonna walk. They might, you know how they do at USC. They'll tell you when you get off the plane. They, you know, they might they let you go back to the campus. They gonna get you out of there. And then the two guys who are gonna face at the end of the year, Jim Harbaugh, Ryan Day. Harbaugh's trying to get over the top.
Huh?
Ryan Day is trying to hold the fort. If you don't beat Harbaugh, you know the people in Buckeye Land ain't gonna be happy. Because you're supposed to continue the legacy. So those two will be on the hot seat in different ways. They're just going to be pressured. Are they going to be asked to leave?
Oh, okay.
They have to win. Harbaugh's got some hold, but it's rumbling in and out. It's time to get over the top. And then my final one is Gus Malzahn. You're just in the SEC, dog. It's Auburn. You're just in the SEC. They're erratic, they're crazy, but it's Auburn. And if you don't beat Alabama, if you don't give them something to chew on, they're going to chew on you. And you're going to be on the Paul Feinbaum show where they're going to say, Paul, I don't know what Gus is doing, Paul, but he need to get out of here. And we're going to get him out, Paul, and that's what's going to happen with you. All right, Hank, I'm going to go to you. People on the hot seat.
Okay, coach is on the hot seat. I picked you know what? You're absolutely right. You got to figure out a way to beat Nick Saban at some point. And with that being said, Ed Orgeron, you know, you over there at LSU and brought you back, and you got to get it done. You got to get it done. And right now you're not even the team they're looking at to be the one to take them down. Okay, the offense is abysmal. All right, you got to figure it out. Secondly, and this might be a shock to some of you, Jimbo Fisher. Okay, the fraud that you might have been at Florida State. Now, Willie Taggart is out there. Jimbo's got to be out there, too. You and the SEC, that's Texas. And speaking of Texas, Tom Herman, you can't beat Maryland, Chief. You can't beat Maryland. So you beating the Red River Shootout ain't getting it done. All right? They didn't bring you over there to be a runner-up. All right? You getting the same kind of talent as my boy did this down at Florida. But he had to go. Charlie Strong. Charlie Strong had to go. You ain't won no more championships than Charlie did. Okay, those are my coaches. Tom Herman. Jimbo, he took the rest of the Hilton and Malzahn. And I'm not putting Jimmy on the hot seat.
I'm just going to keep it real. And you know me, it's family connections. I love it, but I got to keep it real. All right, Darnell.
Man, y'all must be reading my mind. I don't got anything different to say. I got Clay Hilton from USC. That's a story program. You got to do something, baby. we can't see them too much longer without being in that playoff picture. Another team that Hank said, you got Ed Orgeron. You know how he's doing a good job at LSU, but at the same time, you know how it is in the SEC. They fired Les Miles. Mark Rick got fired. You're in with one of the legends in coaching and Nick Saban, and a lot of teams, especially at story programs like Louisiana State University, you gotta find a way somehow to beat Alabama, and If just as you said with Jim Harbaugh, and he's going to be in trouble if he can't beat the teams like Alabama, can't beat the teams like Georgia, even though I think they beat Georgia last year. But if they can't beat those kind of teams, he's going to be in the hot seat. And my third is going to be Gus Malzahn. He's another guy. He's had a very roller coaster up and down. Up and down tenure in at Auburn. He's had the highest of highs with Cam Newton, with Nick Fairley, and the other team with Nick Marshall and Trey Mason, another name that I haven't heard from in a long time, Trey Mason. But he had some high highs and some pretty low lows as well. But he's gonna have he's gonna have to impress and have a very good season at Auburn to avoid being on the hot seat. So those are my three coaches.
And why are you going? I'm gonna keep the ball in your hand on that side of the floor. Who do you think gonna make the Final Four?
Who do I believe is gonna make the Final Four? I'm gonna go with Alabama, of course. I'm rolling with the Tide like I always have been. Clemson, of course. You still have that dynamic duo, and they were only freshmen last year. It's crazy to believe they're only freshmen last year. But then, well, you're gonna have to see them for the next 2 or 3 years, and for the next 3 years, you got Trevor Lawrence, and you have Justin Ross. That dynamic duo is gonna be that's like Tom Brady and Randy Moss, the college version. But you're gonna see Alabama, you're gonna see Clemson. My third team. Let me look. Who is my third team? Oh, Ohio State. My only trepidation with Ohio State is gonna be the quarterback situation. They have a highly talented quarterback in Justin Fields coming in, the transfer from Georgia. He sat behind Jake Fromm, and he uprooted Martell. Tate Martell had to leave. But I watched the spring game, and I watched some tape on him before, and he's a very good runner, but his passing game leaves a lot to be desired. That's the only trepidation with picking Ohio State, but I believe Ohio State will be in there when it's all said and done. But my fourth team is going to be the winner of Oklahoma and Texas. And in my opinion, Oklahoma is going to win. They're going to win that game. Oklahoma should be the fourth team.
All right. Hey.
All right. I'm going to send the youngin out to the woodshed, but because he's almost right. You know, until further proven, you can't remove Alabama, you can't remove Clemson. We just got through saying that their quarterbacks are Heisman candidates, okay? And using Darnell's logic, you can't remove Oklahoma neither, because he made their quarterback a Heisman candidate, okay? So then we come to the fourth team. Now, we just talked about a player. Devon, you did. A player that's off the radar that we expect to have a wicked season, that's got Alabama's offensive coordinator, that's got a smattering of wide receivers, okay? And I'm picking the University of Michigan because for the first time I'm thinking the Harbaugh era, and let me explain this. Hush your mouth. You had your turn. Is that you've got a quarterback that's been there 2 years. You're playing an offense that is of his caliber. It's the only time I've talked about Michigan this whole show. And that's because for the first time, they are now equipped to run an offense that is conducive to the talent that they have on the offensive side of the ball. Okay? And the games they lost saved the game against Ohio State last year. That offense was abysmal, just was not getting it done, okay? I also believe that they've fortified themselves on defense with talent. I think they've kind of learned from their mistakes. All their big games are at home, and all the big games at home last year, they were undefeated at home last year. They've got the one sticking point, in my opinion, is the game against Wisconsin. But you have State. You have both state teams, and you got Notre Dame at home. I think that's enough to propel Michigan to win the Big Ten East finally, to go ahead and win the West, to win the Big Ten, and get into the college football playoff.
Hey, so this is interesting. So I got Clemson because I just think they're going to have some challenging games in the ACC, and I think teams are going to be better, which is, again, continue to strengthen them as the number one seed in the four. But I think they're still a little bit ahead of some of those teams in the ACC, even though those teams will be better. But, you know, they could get shocked. But I got Clemson there. And then this is my shocker. I just think with all the transition and assistant coaches and everything at Alabama, I think this is the breakthrough for Georgia. You know, they got rid of the quarterback controversy piece. I always felt like it was the reason why they struggled last year and didn't quite finish the way they did is because they put Jake Fromm in a position he should have never been in, given his performance the year before. He should have been a clear-cut number one, and they tried to mimic that Alabama piece and not understand if they would have just had confidence in him and just let him do what he needed to do, I think they would have won through those games. But I think eliminating some of that and allowing him to just be that quarterback, I think Georgia is going to have their breakthrough. Are they going to win the national championship? Not necessarily sure about that, but I think they'll be there. Also, given they got some really good – they got Notre Dame coming down with a good non-conference game. I think they'll have a strong pedigree. They'll have the SEC championship where I think they'll beat Alabama in the championship and get in. And then I have Oklahoma. I think a lot of us haven't talked about Jalen as much. I think, Darnell, you might have talked a little bit about him. But I think he's on a mission. And the way in which demonstrated and behaved during his time at Alabama and now transitioning, I think being in Oklahoma with his leadership, I think it's going to feel almost like what happened the situation at Wisconsin. When you have that graduate transfer, it immediately becomes a leader, and then you're off and running with, I think, a little bit different result. And I think that's part of, you know, when Russell came in, you know, it was a Hail Mary and the stuff at Michigan State and stuff that kept that Wisconsin team for making that run. But I think Oklahoma has some pieces in place, and I think Jalen Hurts is going to make a run. So I think Oklahoma's going to be there. I think Herman is going to be up against something when Oklahoma and Texas face each other. And then I said Michigan. The reason why I said it, and my argument with my guys back here, I said the year to look at, I said the year they're going to beat Ohio State is going to be this year, one, because it's going to be at home, even if they would have had Urban. One, it's going to be at home, and then this is going to be really the first complete class of where most of the players have come through Harbaugh's recruiting. With a quarterback who, what I saw last year, resembled somewhat of his personality, but I don't think was given the full reign of the car the way he should have been given. And the one thing I look at is that the schedule, championship schedules are part of it as well. And I think the way they set the schedule for them this year, with some challenges like Wisconsin at the right time and some other challenges, to kind of build them to a point where they have enough confidence. So when they got that dreaded schedule at the end where it really counts to make your run, I think they'll be humming at the right tempo. And then the thing you said that was really important about this with the Ohio State thing, Justin Fields is a great runner, but it still worked in the past. And I think given Michigan's defensive philosophy, that actually plays to their strength. Where they struggled was when you sometimes have that two-way kind of guy. And he can throw, but he ain't a great thrower. He's not a great one. And I think that plays well to them. And playing in Ann Arbor, I give them – it's going to be a barn burner because it always is. And then they go to the Big Ten Championship with ideal. They might play Wisconsin again, who might only have one loss on their record at that point. And then they beat Wisconsin. That puts them, I think, into the final game. And it gets Harbaugh. Now, what Harbaugh does once he gets there, I can't tell you. But I think it's enough for him to get into that game. All right. We'll be debating this for the rest of the year. It's on wax. And now we're going
to – I got one thing to say, man.
What are you going to say?
Okay. I was going to say, you guys got me feeling like Stephen A. Smith. With Michigan, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. So
the revenge tour season 8. Living in Ann Arbor, wearing a Sparty jersey with Buckeye draw. So you don't really count. In some ways, you are aberration. You're an outlier. So we can't even understand your perspective on this.
Yeah, see, here's the thing that drives me nuts. Now, I was going to try to end this show on a high note, but you had to keep talking. See, you had to keep campaigning, so now you're going to get elected. Let me tell you something, okay? This is supposed to be analysis as we know it now. You want to throw something, what can go wrong will go wrong. That could happen with any team, young man. And, oh, by the way, you got a quarterback that transferred in here that can't throw the ball across the street without the help of a crossing guard. Okay? So let's just keep that in the perspective. Now, Ohio State going to be a good team? Of course. But don't sit here and tell me, oh, I'm surprised you ain't got Brian Lewerke on your doggone list as a Heisman Trophy candidate. You know? So here we go again. So close your mouth. Let's end the show. We'll talk about this next week. Give me a lap.
All right, man. Go do your thing. Drop the mic.
All in good luck. All in good fun. All in love, young man. Listen, what I want to talk about tonight, what if I told you that once upon a time, you know, at the end of we're going to keep it on the college football theme. And y'all know that at the end of every college football year, you got the Senior Bowl, you got all these different all-star games for these players to be looked at by the NFL. What if I told you that once upon a time, there was a time when all these college all-stars played on one team and they played against the Super Bowl champion? What if I told you that all these college all-stars at one time played against the Super Bowl champions and they beat them in an exhibition game? Once upon a time, that used to happen. It used to be called the Chicago Charities College All-Star Game. It started at the beginning of preseason for the NFL. It began in 1934. It ended in 1976. Back then, the NFL was trying to get its footing into professional football. College football was the game. So one of the things they used to do is every time they would have the professional football champion to start to follow the next season, you would get a bunch of the best college athletes. They would be on the all-star team, and they would play against the NFL champion. And on a couple of times, they actually beat them. They actually beat teams. They actually beat teams like the Cleveland Browns. They actually beat teams like the Chicago Bears. And yes, they beat the 1958 world champion Detroit Lions. Same old Lions. Even in an exhibition football game, the last time they beat Super Bowl champion, the only time they beat a Super Bowl champion, NFL champion, should I say, was in 1963 when they beat the Vince Lombardi Green Bay Packers. They went on until like 1976. They played teams like the Kansas City Chiefs, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Steel Curtain team. That was the last team they played. That game didn't even finish. There was a severe thunderstorm in that game. They canceled their game, and it never came back. But it used to be fun to watch. You know, I can tell you as an old-timer, it used to be fun to watch these college athletes, you know, from all over the world, and they're playing against the Super Bowl champions. Clearly, something like that couldn't happen today, not with contracts and everything going on. But it was a time. It was a time when football was simpler, when we could just see the best athletes of college football play against the Super Bowl champs, and sometimes they got the best of them. That was then, this is now. That's our show for tonight. Peace.